Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're welcoming a returning graduate of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and a guy who grew up in Raleigh in the shadow of North Carolina State and then went to Duke Medical School and now is turning the medical world upside down with a new book about healing, what he calls healing children. So we want to welcome back to Chapel Hill Dr. Kurt Newman. Welcome, Dr. Newman.
Well, thank you. It's just such a pleasure to be here. Just driving in this morning and seeing the flowers, and you know, it's just beautiful. I can't imagine why I ever left.
Well, you're going to tell us a little bit. I think about why you left. On the morning that we're talking a few days ago. There was a wonderful, beautiful ad for your new book, Healing Children. In the News and Observer, welcoming you back to Raleigh, where you grew up. Let's talk a little bit about your book, Healing Children. What's so special about healing children versus healing the rest of us?
Well, really, the reason I wrote the book was feeling like there were a lot of things people didn't know about the special and priceless value of pediatric medicine. Medicine devoted just to children, and you'd ask in your question, well, you know, what's different about it than adults? And it's all different. Pediatric doctors, children's hospitals are thinking forward. They're not just thinking about the issues that present themselves right there in front of you, the problem you need to fix, the broken bone right then, or the concussion, or whatever the issue is. They're thinking about the long term. What are the implications? What is it that I do today that may impact what happens in the future? And that's the exciting thing about medicine for children. But kids are so different. They need different doctors. They need different hospitals. It's all different. So that's why I wrote the book, was to try and educate and empower parents and people in general about just all this world that I know. And I tried to do it through stories from my own career of kids I took care of as a surgeon, a pediatric surgeon, that inspired me. And in telling these stories, I give people a look inside the world that I know.
Well, how do children differ? If a child gets sick, with the flu, and I get sick with the flu, what? Isn't it the same disease?
Well, it's the virus is the same in the case of flu, but the way it impacts the organs and the way the body reacts is so different in children than adults. And then the things we do are so different because children obviously are smaller, and their biology is different. Their ability to react to things is different. Their immune system is different. And then if you think about lots of other things, there's the whole dimension of growth. Things change over time. And also children may not have had the same, I don't want to say damages, but all the experiences that adults have had, whether it's their heart or smoking or alcohol, those kinds of things. So the whole world is really different, and you really want to have specialists, doctors, hospitals that specialize in the care of children.
Well, if you make everything a specialty, how does a small town general practitioner relate to the this imperative that he or she specializes in pediatrics or OBGYN? If there are such narrow specialties, how do you have a family doctor?
Well, I think family doctors are so important, particularly in certain parts of the country where there's not enough doctors. And I think the really good ones know what they know and then know what they don't know and know when it's time to refer or find a specialist. I think what troubles me, though, is that people just don't know that there's this other world and you know, have access to it. And I, you know, think about a story where I went to a football game, high school football game with some friends of mine. Their son was the quarterback. The mother knew that he had a concussion down
on the field.
She's watching him play down on the field.
How can she tell?
Because she knows her kid, and she can see him, you know, staggering a little bit or just not
But he's throwing touchdown passes.
He threw a touchdown pass with the concussion. She finally said, Kurt, get down there on the field. You got to do something. The medical help wasn't paying as much attention as they should. But the reason to tell this story is that I know what happens with a concussion. It's a brain injury. It's not something that you want to deal with a urgent care or even an adult specialist when you're dealing with your child's brain that's been bruised or is bleeding. So I took him straight to our hospital. Now, that may have been a little more inconvenient, but I knew when we got there he was going to get the best treatment.
How would the treatment for a concussion injury on a teenager moving towards adulthood differ in a hospital? If I had a concussion, why is it going to be so much better at a children's hospital? And you took the risk of transporting him in an automobile rather than an ambulance to a distant hospital. You had to measure all those different.
Yeah, I mean, it was a situation. If he had been in, you know, serious medical trouble in terms of his vital signs or breathing or is an emergency like that, we would have gotten an ambulance and all that kind of thing. But he had the symptoms of a concussion. I think the difference is, and it's not necessarily the hospital, but I think it's more the specialist. The difference is just you want somebody that knows about brain development. You want to know somebody that knows how brain
at that stage healed. In his life, at stage, 7, 16, 17 years old, it's different
so
from what it would be for me.
Right, right. And plus the demands that he's going to have to work with, whether it's school or sports or whatever, are different. And so you need somebody that can sort of integrate all of the pressures of a growing up teenager and his growing brain that isn't necessarily the same as an adult. Not that it's not serious in an adult. And also, you want somebody that knows the difference between a 16-year-old and a 12-year-old and an 8-year-old. And that's not just true of the brain. That can be true of a broken bone. And that's what I mean when I say you want someone that can kind of see what the arc is and what the potential is and thinks forward about of those issues. So on a broken bone, for example, you want somebody that knows how a bone grows or whether a fracture is into a joint or what's going to happen over time. So it's not just fixing the bone right then, but it's thinking about that kid, what he's going to grow up into.
Let me interrupt you and just because this is heady stuff, and we're at a medical center which treats children and adults and babies. But talk to me about setting bones. I'm thinking, you know, bone's a bone. You put it back together and let it grow back together. Is it different if I break a bone than when my 12-year-old grandson breaks a bone?
Absolutely. And part of it is the healing potential of a young person. But probably the most significant thing is the growing potential. And so it's not just the healing itself, but how is it going to heal? And is it going to heal in a way that because it's growing, if you don't let it heal right or help it heal right, then they'll have a deformity or a problem that could limit their activities in the future. And probably the most key thing is the joints and the beyond the bone, the soft tissue. So there's a whole set of complications and considerations, and you want an orthopedic surgeon in this case that understands what that full potential is.
Well, I want to press you on this because it's not because it's important to me. Yeah. But when we're training orthopedic physicians who are going through, as you did, a long residency and then a fellowship, don't they know the difference? I mean, doesn't an orthopedist who's board certified, doesn't he or she know the difference, and can't he or she treat children as well as adults?
Oh, well, absolutely. They get great training. And believe me, we're in the midst of just unbelievable orthopedic training and pediatric orthopedic training. I think probably the majority of the time, they certainly know what their capabilities and expertise is. But there are more and more situations where I think it's important to have that pediatric attention, and probably the general orthopedist is the first to advocate for that. I think the key and the reason I wrote the book was to help parents understand that there's differences, and to try and advocate or press people, ask questions. At the back of this book, I have some tips on how parents can access that.
I'll tell you what, let's take a break and then we'll come back and you can, I think people will be interested in the tips that you have for parents of children in planning for medical care. But in the meantime, we're going to take a break. I'm visiting with Dr. Kurt Newman. He's the author of a new book, Healing Children, A Surgeon's Stories from the Frontiers of Pediatric Medicine. And he is also president and chief executive officer of Children's National in Washington. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with a fellow, well, a former Tar Heel. Now, once a Tar Heel, always a Tar Heel. Grew up in Raleigh, went to Carolina, and then to Duke Medical School. Is now the president and chief executive officer of Children's National in Washington. And welcome again, Dr. Newman.
Well, thank you.
Before the break, you mentioned that as a part of your book, which is primarily a stories book, which I don't want to miss that, but to summarize, you have some pretty strong rules, suggestions for parents of children to prepare for the time when they may need special pediatric help.
That's right. When I was practicing surgery, and most of my career I was a pediatric surgeon, would get these calls from friends of mine, and they'd be in situations that I knew that if they knew what I knew, they could have avoided. Maybe they're in an emergency department that wasn't set up for kids, or they were about to have anesthesia on their child, and the anesthesiologist hadn't done a lot of pediatric cases. Mm-hmm. And they'd ask me what to do, and I'd be thinking to myself, well, gosh, how did you ever get into that situation? And it dawned on me, and instead of just getting frustrated or angry about it, was to help people by writing this book. And part of the reason I wanted to help them was to provide ways that they could get information ahead of time before and educate themselves and empower themselves ahead of time. So asking lots of questions, asking the pediatrician, well, who do you refer to? Who are the specialists you refer to? Or if your child is going to have surgery, what is that facility and who's providing the anesthesiology? Do they only take care of children, or is most of their practice adults, for example? Or checking the health plan, making sure that the children's hospital in your area is part of that health plan so that you don't get into a situation and then find out that you're not covered there. These are all the kinds of things that people can do ahead of time. And probably a big one is if your child's in school playing sports, well, where is the nearest emergency department that really knows how to take care of kids? Has the nurses, has the medications, the equipment that can take care of kids?
Well, since we are talking to folks who live in Chapel Hill and some in Durham, don't we have two places that fill the bill? There are no children. They're not children's hospitals. We don't have one nearby, do we?
Well, it's not necessarily a separate children's hospital within UNC and Duke, but you've got really, really good services.
You have a wing of the hospital.
I mean, for all intents and purposes, it's a
hospital.
Real children's hospital, right. And Wake Med, too. Lots of terrific pediatric services there. I don't have any question about that. But it's more some of the community hospitals may not be ready for children, and you want to know that. And it may be worth driving that 10, 20, 30 extra minutes to get the best care possible.
Well, if we didn't live in this medically rich area, but lived out in the country, how would you ask the question? You've got a local hospital. Do you like the administrator? Maybe even they have an affiliation with UNC or with Charlotte's hospital. I can't remember the new name of that or with Duke, but they're standalone hospitals. How do you just rudely go up and ask the board?
I don't think you need to be rude about it, but I think you do want to advocate. And usually the pediatrician is probably your best or the family medicine doctor. And you talk to them and say, look, you know, my child, you know, is in an emergency. Where would you send them? And if the answer is, well, the local community hospital, the next question is, well, are they set up to take care of my kid when he comes in an emergency? And if not, maybe that's a point of advocacy to get it set up. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of things that can be done to bring things up to and with technology now, there's telemedicine. There's lots of ways to support hospitals. But they've got to be in the mode of recognizing the difference between children and adults and not just assuming that what they're doing for adults is going to apply it for children. I think that's the big mistake.
Here's what my idea of what would happen if I were living in a small town and my kid got hurt in a football game. There's no time to negotiate. We're going to rush him to the local hospital. And the doctor who's on call may or may not be even trained in orthopedics, it would be a guess as to what specialty might be represented at that particular point. But I don't have any room to bargain at that point. What do I do when the emergency happens and I'm in the middle of treatment?
Well, I think my perfect vision would be is that all that gets advocated for and before that football game or whatever. Activity is happening. It's all been set up that there's a system and people understand what's going to happen, and it's not trying to create the care in the midst of a crisis. And I think that is really a conversation I'm trying to spark with this book is that people will think about these things ahead of time and not wait until the crisis situation. And there's lots of ways to do that. So I'm hopeful that conversation will really start pushing and forcing the issue. So emergency departments really take a look and, you know, go through the motions of, well, what are we going to do if a child comes in? What is the plan? What is the transportation? But parents can really be a big part of that.
I want to continue this just for one more minute or two. But I think, you know, emergency facilities at Duke and at Chapel Hill are good. But it's a scramble in the emergency room. I mean, no, when I've gone, people are just scrambling around. I didn't see any place where there was a place for just specially for kids. How does that work in a good hospital like we've got here?
Well, they do, I'm sure. I haven't been there in a while, but I'm pretty sure they have it all set up for children and a good way to navigate in through that. Because just all of the specialty care and everything goes on. And I know on the outside, to the casual observer, it does look like chaos, but there's a real system behind that. But I do think there's more that we can do, and that part of this is having the parents be a part of the team and to be in places where they can feel like they're part of the team and get the best care for their children.
I think that's the best advice that you gave me. I'm still having trouble with the plan, you know, with the detailed planning in advance for remote possibilities. But once it happens, you're unleashed in me the idea that I not only have the right or but I have the responsibility to make my way into being a part of that team to help, maybe sometimes aggressively help the people who are charged with providing the care for my child.
I think that's right. I mean, the biggest kind of errors or deficiencies I made on certain patients or families as I think back was when I didn't listen, when I wasn't listening, particularly the mother, not that fathers aren't important, but the mother. And, you know, there's so much that goes along with the intuition and knowing your child, just like that story I told about the concussion, the mother knowing that her son before anybody else did. And time again, where the mother just kind of knows what's going on with her child. And if that doesn't get expressed, and also if it's not being listened to, I think bad things happen. And so you want to be in a place where you feel like your opinions, your ideas are being embraced. And also you want to have the not necessarily the courage, but this is your child. Don't be afraid to advocate for them and ask the questions. And I've seen so many times where, you know, the medical team might be going down a direction. And I had a mother one time say, look, basically, this is not ours to say. There's a bigger thing going on here. And it was almost a spiritual thing about a child that we thought probably wasn't going to make it. And she said, Dr. Newman, you know, this is my son. And that just changed the conversation for me. And he was wrote about him in the book, young man, ended up playing soccer. I didn't think,
a miracle. Yeah.
You know, it was, and that's the thing I've learned about children too. There's so much resilience and so much whether it's biology or just they don't know anything different. They're just pushing forward to heal what's ever going on. And that's what we need to do. We need to channel all of that energy. And because they're, you know, you never, I remember I had a boss, a mentor that said, you know, you never can tell by looking at them how far a frog can jump. I'm trying to do the Southern thing there, but how far a frog can jump. That just played out so many times with children.
I want to talk about your mentor who told you that, your Tennessee friend who told you that story. We need to take a quick break, but we'll come back to frog jumping. I'm visiting with Dr. Kurt Newman about his book, Healing Children. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. I'm visiting with Dr. Kurt Newman, who's come back to Chapel Hill where he did his undergraduate work, come back to North Carolina where he grew up in Raleigh, and to Duke Medical School where he had his first brush of medical training. Before we took a break, you introduced us to your mentor who told you this story that somebody told him in Tennessee. I want you to tell us the frog jumping story one more time.
Well, Dr. Randolph was a pediatric surgeon. He was the first pediatric surgeon in Washington, D.C. And I came from Boston where I'd done my surgery training up at the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Harvard to Washington to train with him. And he was just the greatest guy. He was a real leader. He was almost felt like he was a coach of a team the way he dealt with people. He was very interested in scars and burns and all and disfigurements as well as all different types of cancer. I mean, you name it, he did it. And he was just inspirational. But I think his he had so many of these sayings and things. But one of the ones that stuck with me was not to give up on children. And not to, because you just never can tell by looking at them from the surface, you know,
how far that frog can
jump. And it played out so many different times over my career where I'd be with a child and I'd be thinking of a baby that I took care of named Tyler. He came in, he was born, he had the most unbelievable. And nobody had seen this kind of thing before. They called me in to
complicated
bowels on the outside, and I was actually on a date with my future wife at that time. But came in, and the thing about surgery and about pediatric surgery and specialties is, again, it's not the situation you see right there in front of you is the only thing. But it's thinking, and this was Dr. Randolph's deal, was to think about, well, what's the future of that child? What is he going to grow up to be? So you don't want to do too much. You can come back a different day, because children, the way they heal and the growth, you don't want to do anything that's irreversible. And so that's what I did with Tyler. And, you know, at the time I thought, wow, you know, he may not live to be 4 or 5 or, you know, even into teenage years. Well, 20 operations later, you know, and he was in and out of the hospital. His mother, I mean, she was there at his bedside all the time. This kid, you know, I never thought he'd graduate from high school. I was at his high school graduation. Never thought he'd go to college. He graduated from college. Given his situation, I never thought he'd have a girlfriend. He had a permanent colostomy. Not only he had a girlfriend, but he married a wonderful girl named Jessie. And then, given what, you know, I saw and all the operations we had, I never thought he'd be able to have children. And as I was finishing writing the book, I got a call from him and said he and his wife, Jessie, were going to have a healthy baby boy.
That's such a great story. There's another part of that story that you told where you kind of got – you had to take a slam from your bride-to-be.
Yeah, well, that's true.
And, well, lesson, I mean, it was – lesson, I think.
It was. And that – she was a nurse, and we were out on this date. She came in with me. I thought I was going to be really impressing her with my whole surgery thing and, you know, kind of – Mr. Cool operation.
Well, the truth is, she should be impressed, particularly when this kid.
Well, that was a little over the top, I think. But she came in with me to see what was going on. And it was all, she was a nurse at the hospital, so they set it up for her. And I'm focused on the child and the anesthesia and everything that's going on with this baby. And I come out and I'm really proud. We've finished the operation. I think, well, this is. She's really going to be impressed. And it was the exact opposite. She said she was angry. She said, what were you guys doing? You were not thinking about this baby. He needed his mother. She's in a different hospital. There was nobody there giving this baby what he needed. He needed his mother there. He needed somebody looking out for him, caressing him, holding him tight, making sure he's warm, all the things that a baby need. And she was right. And it was a real open-eye lesson for me to think more about things through the eyes of that baby. And
did your wife ever get over it, or your wife-to-be ever get over it?
Well, it took me a couple more years of courting to get her to the point where she would marry me, but she's been passionate about that. And I think it was also it's a good sign and thought, set of thoughts around nurses and the other members of the team that are so important to the outcome and healing children.
Well, I agreed with your wife-to-be that it would be better if a child who's going through surgery has warm, connective attention all the way through. But what I wouldn't want is for you as the surgeon to have that being your primary focus at that moment. That I want your primary focus. If I'm the patient or the parent of the patient, I want you, with your full attention to this child's medical problem. And so there's kind of a conflict. And you think of surgeons, many surgeons aren't all that, many of the highly qualified trained surgeons are good, you could say, because they are so cold and focused and on the results.
Well, I think that's evolving, and I think the great surgeons are team leaders, and they embrace the whole team. So while you're focused, you need to be sure that your team is performing at and thinking about those things, so maybe you don't have to concentrate on it. But at the end of the day, the outcome, whether it's is not just the technical aspects, but it's just the whole child. And I'm thinking about another story about Dr. Randolph, which, and I mentioned that he was so intent on scarring and what kids look like in the future. And he had would just drill that into us about thinking about it. So I had this child that was, she was a daughter of friends of mine. She had a brain tumor. She needed one of those porta-casts that you put in right in the middle of the chest where you put the chemotherapy in. And it creates a scar right there. But it's so helpful to the families and the children to get this chemotherapy. And she had a brain tumor, and her mother's sitting there, and I'm explaining things. And I'm explaining it to her that she's going to have this scar right there in the middle of her chest. And she, the little girl gets this just horrible look on her face, like, oh, my God. And it was like Dr. Randolph was channeling into my brain at that point. And I said, but you know what? We're not going to do that for you. We're going to put this porta-cath over to the side right here under your arm so that nobody will see the scar. And the mother goes, why are you going to do that? Why are you going to do it the same way you would do for any child? Why would you want to do it different for my child? And I said, well, you know, when she grows up a little more and goes to a prom, I don't want her to have a scar right there on her on her chest. So that did two things. One, the little girl just relaxed. She said, oh, you know, she didn't want that scar that was going to be so visible. The mother, she relaxed and was excited because she started envisioning her daughter actually having a prom with this brain tumor.
Yeah.
So then it was just wild. About 4 years later, I get an envelope, a picture.
At
there's
the prom.
This beautiful girl in her prom dress. And wouldn't you know it, it had this huge slit right down the middle, and you couldn't see any scar or anything. And, you know, that just kind of says it all about that thinking forward. You want the doctors, nurses, you want the whole team thinking forward about that child because that helps them heal, too.
Well, if you joined us late, we're visiting with Dr. Kurt Newman. He's the author of a new book, Healing Children, Surgeon Stories from the Frontiers of Pediatric Medicine. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. If you joined us late, I'm visiting with Dr. Kurt Newman. We're talking about his book, Healing Children. And those who've stayed with us the whole time know that you went to medical school at Duke, but you not only went to medical school there, you were a patient there.
Yeah,
what did you learn from that experience?
It was, Duke was such an enlightening experience, and I was working in my third year in the laboratory of a Nobel Prize winner, Dr. Robert Lefkowitz, and I reached up one day and felt a little something in my neck. And long story short, that turned out to be a thyroid tumor and a cancer. And the care I got at Duke and the surgeons and just the whole team, it just opened my eyes. And I shifted, actually, from being thinking I was going to be a cardiologist to seeing what my surgeon did for me to really go down the career path of surgery. And I, was cured. But it was something that really stuck with me about the impact you could have as a surgeon. And, I just owe a lot to Duke. Now, there was another part of that. As I woke up in the recovery room from my surgery, there was, I was getting a lot of attention being a medical student there. But there was a little girl in the same recovery room, and she wasn't getting that same attention. And that always stuck with me and was something that I wanted to see if I could impact. And now as the CEO of a hospital, I want to make sure that we, provide the resources and things for children. And so much has changed, but whether it's art, music, the right doctors, but to create a healing environment. So I just learned so much over my career that now I have this great opportunity to put into place at a children's hospital.
Well, we hadn't even talked about what you do now. We talked about you as a surgeon, not enough. But why did you give up surgery to be a manager?
Yeah, well, it was a tough decision. And Dr. Randolph, who we talked about, I don't think he ever really agreed with it. But I had this feeling more and more that I could take the things I'd learned as a surgeon and then put them into place at a hospital-wide. And I had this terrific opportunity to become the CEO of one of the world's great children's hospitals. And I wanted to take those things and some of the things we've talked about empowering the parents or creating teams or elevating nursing and child life and bringing music and healing into it. And I've just been having a ball. But, it was hard to give up surgery. I loved it.
No, I can imagine. Although it's great. Your mentor had to retire at 65. Well, managers of hospitals don't have to retire at 65.
Well, there is that. And, there's a certain credibility, too, as a as a leader, as a manager, to having been on the front lines and been there in the middle of the night or been in the emergency department or just knowing what the mechanics of a hospital are. And then being able to look at things, too, from not only the doctor's perspective, but also from the patient's perspective. And I never let go of what it felt like to be a patient at Duke.
I want you to tell us about a guy named Joe Roberts, who came in and had a son who was a patient. He came in and just caused y'all so much trouble complaining about people interrupting his sleep at the hospital, not having a comfortable place. And he must have made you sick.
Well, you know, I was taking care of his son and had a his son had a big operation. And Joe was a worldwide businessman. I mean, he was a, you know, multimillionaire. But he was a father. And he stayed with his son. And, you know, at the time we had uncomfortable beds. And it was just, we weren't thinking about the patient. We were thinking about all the needs of the doctors, nurses, and everybody else but the patient. And at the end of this, it was a week. Joe had been there day and night. He said to me, he said, Dr. Newman, you've got great doctors and nurses here, but your care is terrible. And, you know, I thought, oh, my God, he's going to write a letter to the CEO. You know, I didn't know I'd be getting those letters in the future. But he said the next thing was just what was amazing. He said, but I want to help you. I want to help you. And he did. And what we embarked on was really trying to revolutionize surgery for children and thinking about pain and trying to eliminate pain and trying to develop new tools for surgeons and using research to drive a whole new way of caring for patients. Because his deal was, he said, look, don't think about just incremental. He said, think big. Think about changing things about what it would be like to be a child and have surgery 20 years from now. What would you like to see happen? And that was just a whole different mindset.
Well, great ideas, but where are the resources going to come?
And then he set about finding those resources, and he helped me get hundreds of millions of dollars of philanthropy to support that. Now, the key is, you know, taking care of children. What I found, you know, more and more kids are on Medicaid, and what I worry about is whether we're going to put and continue to put enough resources into our children, whether it's mental health, whether it's the research, whatever it is. There is so much exciting stuff on the frontiers. If we invest properly, we're going to change medicine for children. And by changing it for children, it changes it for adults. We can eliminate a lot of the things, a lot of the chronic diseases, diabetes, mental health, if we stick with our research and putting that into place.
Are you optimistic about that?
I am so optimistic because, you know, I think people in America, you know, they'll do the right thing. We just got to, you know, people like me have to educate people. And the young people I see coming into medicine, they're bright, they're excited, they're inspired. They want to make change. And it's our job, our duty to help them do that.
Well, I'm sorry we're about out of time. I promised you a minute or two at the end to cover all the things that we didn't cover in our conversation.
Well, I am just thrilled to be back here in Chapel Hill and just talk about UNC, Duke, all, you know, the great things that go on there every day. And one of the things that goes on is research and changing the future and the future for children. And that's another part of the book here is that all my proceeds will go into research. But I really appreciate the opportunity to tell some stories and about my career, children, just amazing families, and give people some insight into what's possible.
Well, you certainly got us excited, and we hope that you'll come back to Chapel Hill. We'll allow you to come and go back to your medical school at Duke and to your father's school at North Carolina State University, where your dad was a teacher for almost 50 years.
Yeah, it was just so great growing up here with all these great universities and schools, and really set me on a course of doing some things that I'm really proud of. So thank you.
Well, thanks to Dr. Kurt Newman, author of Healing Children, A Surgeon Stories from the Frontiers of Pediatric Medicine, for his book and for his willingness to come and visit with us today. And thanks to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.